And welcome back to Success Made to Last. I'm Rick Tokini. Our very special guest today is Pico Iyer. He has been on our Transform Travel show many times, and he's back on today. Pico is a graduate of Oxford and was also educated at Harvard and has been writing books on travel since 1986. He spent his life in Japan. He's been at a Benedictine hermitage in California. He's lived all over. Pico, how are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
On our Transform Travel show, which is a part of Success Made to Last, we have three top influencers in our lifetime. And Pico, you happen to be one of the three.
My gosh, I'm really honored. Well, it's a delight to be here and to talk to you at last.
Let me quote you. Notice how chaos turns into order. You went on to say that the more we see of someplace, the less enticing it becomes. Such profound words to us. And today, we want to talk to you about your book, Sacred Places.
Wonderful. You know, this was a really exciting show for me because it's on the theme of pilgrimage. And they got together two people who had never met before. One was myself, and one was a professor of anthropology called Zoila Mendoza. And Professor Mendoza is from Peru, and she spent decades investigating every last detail of one particular pilgrimage in her home country. So she knows everything about that. And I'm sort of the opposite extreme because I'm not grounded in any one tradition, but I've spent my life, as you know, traveling from Jerusalem to Tibet to Rome to Varanasi, watching other people's pilgrimages. So Zoila gives us an intense look at one particular experience, and I try to give an overview of why people will always go on pilgrimages and always be drawn to some untapped light at the heart of them.
Yes. The comparison is brilliant. There is such stark contrast there. Let's start with a baseline question for you. Why do people want to take pilgrimages?
I think they want to come closer to what's at the heart of them. And so just as you say, the forms are very different, but I think the spirit is the same. And a Tibetan Buddhist, when he goes to Rome, can understand why Catholics are coming to the Vatican as surely as a Catholic walking around the Jokang Temple in Lhasa will understand that impulse. And, you know, I'm often moved by that line in Shakespeare when Romeo first meets Juliet. He calls himself a pilgrim, and I think that's a way of saying the pilgrimage is how we forget about the trivial stuff in life and try to go to the core of what's in us and what's in the world.
You've often quoted about abstracts. Why do people travel to avoid a life of abstraction?
I'd say two things. The first is that it's a wonderful thing to sit in Colorado or California and read the Bible, but there's no experience to compare with walking around the old city of Jerusalem. Under you are the same stones that were there when Jesus walked them. People are recreating the walk along the 12 stations of the cross. They're kissing the ground where Jesus is said to have been crucified. And the intensity and the passion and the way that that place gets inside you is like nothing on earth and really like nothing you could experience here. So suddenly those great heroes like Jesus who have been names and principles and ideas to us are living beings by our side, as they should always be. But go to a place like Jerusalem and the door swings open and you feel there's no barrier between right now and 2015 years ago. And I think the other reason I love travel generally is to just to try to put a face or a voice to a foreign place. As long as it's a foreign place, it's just a word or an abstraction in our head. But when you go to a place like North Korea, I was just back there, suddenly it's not just a dark, scary force. It's people trying to support their parents and kids playing in the street and others who are suffering under a very difficult system. And I've always felt that North Korea is a kind of a scary place for us because most North Koreans have never met an American. And so if you've never met somebody, it's easy to be very ruthless towards them. But in the same way, many of us have never met a North Korean. And as soon as you get off the plane there, suddenly what was just an idea in your head becomes a much more complex, exciting, powerful reality.
Indeed, it's a deeper understanding of culture, putting aside prejudice and bias.
Exactly, because I find that whenever I'm sitting here at home in the U.S., if I think about Syria or Cuba or Vietnam, the first thing I think about is how different they are from us. Their systems are different, their governments are opposed to ours, their traditions are different. As soon as I get off the plane in Damascus or Cuba and I get into a taxi, the taxi driver is telling me how he doesn't like the state of the economy and he's worried about the predicament of his kids and he's just fallen in love with a woman, and he sounds like any taxi driver in Denver or Los Angeles. In other words, as soon as you confront a place in the flesh, you're reminded of how similar we are. From distance, you only see the differences.
That's right. Now we understand how you spend time in a monastery and what you accomplish there. But how does that time prepare you for travel?
Oh, I think it transformed it. Because I think we all know that when we enjoy a wonderful trip, we'll spend 10 or 14 days collecting experiences and memories and emotions. But for me, the real journey starts when I get home. And I spend maybe the next 10 or 14 years thinking about what I saw and trying to make sense of it and incorporating it into my life. And so I think the core of travel is sitting still and putting everything you've experienced into a larger perspective. And so, as you said, for the last 24 years, I've been living a lot of my life as a retreatant in this Benedictine hermitage. And it's only by stepping out of the world and stepping away from the bombardment of texts and cell phones and CNN updates that I can really begin to understand my life and the world itself. So I still spend a lot of my time there, and it's almost as if being there has laid the foundations for the house of my life, and travel has allowed me to decorate the rooms of it. But really, the core of it, the way that I make my life as opposed to making my living, takes place in stillness. And I think, you know, that goes back to some of what we talk about in this show on pilgrimage, because I've always loved that sentence by the great explorer John Muir, who said that going out is going in. In other words, let's say you go next week to Venice and you see all the beautiful canals. That's a wonderful experience. But what you really take back with you when you go home is some journey to some part of yourself or some emotion or some intuition that you never had before you went to Venice. In other words, it's really an inner journey. And that's one reason I was so excited to be on the show Global Spirit, because it's the rare travel show that's not about external travel so much as internal travel. And in fact, you know, the title of the show is Global Spirit, and I wrote a book for the new millennium in the year 2000 called The Global Soul. So it's almost exactly the same title. And I think it speaks for that same principle, which is that whether you fall in love or whether you go to Hawaii tomorrow, the real part is happening inside you. It's nothing to do with the snapshots. It's much more to do with the memories and feelings.
So well said. Recently, we went to Angkor Wat, and what we did there was try to experience as locals. And I'm certain that what we experience will forever have changed us because we went there as a pilgrimage.
Beautiful. I so agree with that, because whenever I've had a really good trip, when I come home, my message to myself is, let me try to look around my hometown with the same wide awake eyes I brought to Angkor Wat or Iran or wherever it might happen to be. And I don't often manage to live up to that, but it's certainly a good idea. And every now and then I'll come back to my mother's house here in California, and I'll be jet lagged and kind of tired and out of sorts. And I'll just go for a drive, and I'll imagine I'm somebody from Cambodia who's just arrived in California, and I'll realize that California or Colorado or wherever you happen to live is probably one of the most beautiful places on earth if only you can see it with the right eyes. And that's why, you know, I think so many of the great pilgrims, like Henry David Thoreau, realize that you can find heaven, you can find whatever you need right at home if only, as you said, you can awaken those clear eyes and that mindful spirit of being right here, right now.
Absolutely. And about pilgrimages, why should our listening audience consider one this coming year?
Because I think we're surrounded by so many things that aren't so important. The latest email we got, the newspaper, what just was shown on TV, that our lives are only as rich as our commitment to what is most significant. And what is most significant to us is usually what we find at the end of a pilgrimage. And a pilgrimage doesn't have to be to the far corners of the world. Just go and walk towards your neighborhood church or your temple or a garden, or take a walk in the wilderness, leave your cell phone at home, go with somebody you care about, and say, I am traveling with wide awake eyes because I want to be transformed. And I think the nature of travel is connected in all those words starting with trans, like transport, transformation, and then transcendence. So that when you come back from that walk or when you emerge from the church, you can feel richer, deeper, and subtler. You realize that you're a slightly different person from the one who went in an hour or even 20 minutes before. And if undertaken in the right spirit, I think any journey can become a pilgrimage. And when you go to somewhere like the Vatican, you notice some people are going as tourists and they're gathering snapshots, and some of us are going as travelers to witness a pilgrim. But those people who are going as believers, who really are putting their souls on the line, come back with a glow. Their eyes are on fire. Their beings are transformed. And you realize they have brought so much to the experience, they've taken away a huge amount too. So I think the beauty of pilgrimage is it tells us to risk everything, and then we will get more than we've ever imagined.
So the core of travel is to arrive back home and begin to spend life in a transformed way. Finally, Pico, how can we, as a fast-paced audience, find quiet time to prepare for the act of transformed travel and to live seasonally?
Yes, I love that question. And in fact, I just brought out a book from TED Books called The Art of Stillness, arguing that for a lifelong traveler like myself or like you, the most important component is the stillness. So I would say the beauty of quiet is it's wherever you are. It's right here, right now, and it doesn't cost very much. That if you're a young single mom with two kids and you feel you don't have a single moment to yourself, just ask a friend or your mother or your husband to look after those kids for 20 minutes. Go for a walk around the block or go to a quiet place in the house and just close your eyes. And you will have so much more to bring to those kids or, indeed, to your next travel experience. When you step into the car today to drive 30 minutes to the grocery store, turn off the radio and just take a vacation in your head and let your mind go running like a dog on the beach without its tether. If you go to the health club and you're walking on the treadmill, don't turn on the TV. And suddenly you've got a wide open space in your day and in your head where you can come up with things that will transform the rest of your day and perhaps the rest of your life. And we all know that things are accelerating at such a pace now. It's kind of a post-human pace, that our big luxury is slowness, going nowhere, and paying attention. But the beauty of it is, as I say, you don't have to go far away to find it. You don't have to spend a lot of money. All you have to do is make the effort. And I know I have some friends who go for a run every morning, and they come back from the run with a whole inner bank of quietness inside them. Or some people will do yoga, or some people will meditate, some people will cook, some people will go for hikes. I think we all have our own ways of doing it, but we realize that if we don't bring quietness into our life, it's not going to come to us from the TV or the computer or anything external, and we're going to get dizzy and we'll feel like we're on an accelerating roller coaster that we never really wanted to get on, that now we don't know how to get off. So I think it's a matter of almost keeping one's sanity and keeping one's balance and just being able to do justice to all the experiences that are coming in on us every day. So I think every traveler loves movement, but every traveler knows that the heart of movement is what you do and how you can process things in absolute stillness.
Pico, thank you so much for being on our Success Made to Last travel show. We really appreciate you and your wonderful wisdom.
Thank you so much, Rick. It's been a real delight, and I love the notion of transformation that you're spreading around the world. So please keep it up, and thank you for the welcome, Matt.
Thank you so much. That was Pico Iyer, one of our favorite travel writers, great man of wisdom. We hope that you enjoyed him today, and we hope that by listening to his wisdom, you will choose to live and create a life that matters. Until next time, have a great week. So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program.